Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring data literacy in academic success and research. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
I'm really looking forward to getting into this one.
Yeah, it's going to be a great discussion. I want you to imagine this scenario. You're standing in front of a boardroom or maybe a lecture hall, right? And you are pitching an idea that you know in your bones is going to work.
Oh, yeah. High stakes.
Exactly. The audience is totally listening. But the second the CEO or, you know, your professor raises their hand and asks, what's your proof, your mind just goes entirely blank.
That is the ultimate nightmare scenario, honestly.
It really is. I mean, you have the opinions, you have the passion, but you have no hard evidence. So today, our mission is making sure that never happens to you. We're talking about transforming how you interact with information, fundamentally changing your relationship with data so you can actually back up every single claim you make.
Because that transition, right, moving from just having a really strong opinion to possessing undeniable proof that is the entire foundation of data literacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people hear the phrase data literacy and they immediately picture themselves locked in this windowless room.
Oh, totally. Just staring at spreadsheets.
Right. Staring at an endless, intimidating spreadsheet filled with like thousands of tiny numbers. It feels like a massive math problem.
Yeah. And it's not.
No. The mechanics of it are entirely different. In a digitally enabled world, data literacy is really a communication tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mechanism that lets you point to a really complex reality and say, I don't just think this is true. I can actually show you the structural reasons why it's true.
But wait, let me push back on that for just a second.
Sure.
Because isn't data inherently objective? I mean, if I have a verified spreadsheet of facts, shouldn't those numbers just sort of speak for themselves?
You'd think so, right?
Yeah. If I drop a table of accurate data into a presentation, why do I need to be literate in it? They're just facts.
Well, the thing is, data on its own is entirely inert. It's just raw material. To really understand why data doesn't speak for itself, you have to look at how easily the exact same numbers can be manipulated to tell two completely conflicting stories.
Okay, give me an example.
Well, take a basic visual, like a bar graph showing a company's profit over 2 years. Let's say year one profit is $50 million.
Okay.
And year two is $51 million.
So that's a pretty small incremental 2% increase.
Exactly. But what if whoever made that graph decides to start the vertical y-axis at $49 million instead of zero?
Oh, wow.
Suddenly that $1 million difference looks like a towering massive spike on the page.
Because the bottom of the graph is cut off.
Right. The numbers are completely accurate. The data is technically true. But the story being told is a total manipulation of scale.
That makes so much sense. It's almost like raw satellite coordinates.
Okay.
Having the exact latitude and longitude is great. It's a verifiable fact. But without a GPS interface to actually translate those raw floating numbers into like a glowing blue line on a map, the user is just going to drive their car off a cliff.
That is a perfect analogy.
Right. Having the coordinates isn't enough. Your job as the student or the future professional is to be that GPS interface.
And that functional translation is what really separates weak academic data skills from strong ones. Because when you lack these skills, it's like building a house on sand.
Yeah, your arguments just lack structural integrity.
Exactly. You might have a beautifully written introduction, but the moment someone scrutinizes your methodology, the entire argument collapses. Because the underlying data wasn't interpreted correctly, or maybe it was just taken totally out of context.
Right.
On the flip side, strong academic data literacy acts like a reinforced concrete framework. It elevates the quality of the research and permanently boosts your credibility. You aren't just summarizing what others have said anymore.
You're structurally proving it.
Exactly. It drives your work with evidence-based reasoning.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I want to talk about what that actually feels like for the listener.
Okay.
Evidence-based reasoning sounds incredibly polished in theory.
It does.
But practically, when you are in the middle of a stressful, high-stakes project, you're staring at a blank screen at 2 a.m, drowning in this sea of conflicting internet statistics. What is the actual experience of using this skill?
Yeah, that 2 a.m. feeling is rough. Under deadline pressure, evidence-based reasoning functions as an anchor.
An anchor, okay.
Yeah, because normally, that late night anxiety comes from a place of guessing. You know, you are desperately trying to stretch an opinion to hit a word count.
Oh, we've all been there. Just trying to fluff it up.
Right. And you're constantly worrying if the professor or the stakeholder is going to see right through it. But when you rely on reliable information and verifiable data sets, that anxiety just disappears.
Because you aren't guessing anymore.
Precisely. You are methodically laying down track. You're moving from a state of hoping you are right to systematically demonstrating reality.
Okay, so I understand that I need to be the GPS interface, and I understand the psychological relief of having an anchor. But practically, when I log onto the internet, I am hit with an absolute avalanche of information.
It's overwhelming.
It really is.
Yeah.
How do I even begin to filter the noise? Our core concepts here mention academic evidence, research analysis, and evidence-based learning.
Mm-hmm.
How do we turn those from, like, abstract concepts into a daily workflow?
Well, it requires a deliberate filtering mechanism. To gather academic evidence, you really have to bypass the algorithms of standard search engines.
Because they just show you what's popular.
Right? Exactly. Regular search engines are designed to give you the most highly clicked answer, not necessarily the most rigorously tested one. You have to deliberately seek out credible academic sources where the data has actually survived peer review. And then for evidence-based learning, the strategy is about strict alignment. Like, every major claim you make must have a structural tether to that reliable evidence.
Okay.
And finally, for research analysis, it really comes down to cross-referencing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at multiple data sets and findings to identify the through line, rather than just stopping at the very first statistic that happens to align with your initial assumption.
Yeah, but here's where it gets really interesting. That cross-referencing piece brings up a big hurdle.
What's that?
Let's say I find a great data set. Finding the data is one thing, but if you just drop a bunch of numbers into an assignment, it usually falls totally flat, right?
Completely.
Because I'm not a statistician.
Hmm.
If I can't just throw the spreadsheet at my professor or my boss, what am I functionally supposed to do with it?
That's where you have to translate the data clearly. Translating data means identifying the trend and explaining the why behind the numbers.
The why?
Yeah. Raw data tells you what happened. Translation tells your audience why it actually matters to them.
Oh, I see.
You're taking these abstract metrics and you're connecting them to real-world consequences or behaviors or outcomes. You are building a narrative bridge between the data set and the problem you're trying to solve.
Okay, let's ground this in a real-world scenario from our lesson.
Great.
Because we have this case study about a student who completely transformed the quality of their research by doing exactly this.
Right, the transit study.
Yeah. Let's give it some teeth and look at how this mechanism actually played out.
Mm.
This wasn't just a student who found a random chart online. They were working with a verified academic data set analyzing urban development.
Specifically looking at public transit delays over a 5-year period.
Exactly. Now, a student with weak data literacy would just paste the chart into their paper and write, "Public transit is delayed a lot in the winter."
Which is an observation, not an analysis.
Yeah.
It provides absolutely zero value to the reader. Everyone knows it snows.
Right. But this student actually translated the data. They didn't just report the delays. They cross-referenced that transit data set with historical weather data and municipal budget cuts.
And that's the key right there.
They translated the trend to show that the delays weren't just caused by snow. They were caused by a specific reduction in the winter maintenance budget from 3 years prior.
Yes.
They didn't just say, "Here is a table of delays." They told the class, "Here is a verified pattern showing how a 10% budget cut resulted in a 40% increase in winter transit delays, which ultimately cost the city more in lost economic productivity."
They gave the numbers a voice.
They really did.
And you know that academic exercise? That is the exact same workflow used in high-level professional environments every single day.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Stakeholders, CEOs, grant committees, they do not have the time to decipher raw tables. They rely on professionals who can look at a wall of numbers, extract the actionable trend, and present a clear, evidence-based conclusion. Taking a verified data set on transit and translating it into an economic trend for a class report. That is a direct practice run for drafting a high-stakes business proposal.
Yeah.
You are training the exact cognitive muscles you need to lead projects in your future career.
I love that. But translating data like that gives you an enormous amount of power.
It does.
Which means it comes with a massive responsibility, right? You're kind of like a detective.
How so?
Well, you can't just make an arrest because you have a hunch. You need hard evidence that holds up to scrutiny. you are the one shaping the narrative. If we go back to that transit example, you could easily cherry-pick the data.
Oh, easily.
You could just ignore the budget cuts entirely and blame the weather if that fit your personal bias.
Oh.
So how do we ensure the story we are shaping is actually ethical and responsible?
Responsible data use really comes down to acknowledging the full landscape of the information, not just the parts that happen to be convenient for your argument.
Right.
Because the human brain naturally gravitates toward confirmation bias. If you believe a certain policy is failing, you are going to subconsciously seek out the one isolated statistic that proves your point.
And just ignore the 20 data sets that show it's succeeding.
Exactly. True data literacy requires you to actively fight that instinct. That's why our lesson mandates that you compare multiple sources and findings.
Mm-hmm.
It means looking objectively at the strengths of a particular analysis while simultaneously being completely transparent about its possible limitations.
I want to stop on that word. Limitations.
Okay.
I think a lot of people feel that if they admit their data has limitations, they are shooting themselves in the foot.
Oh, I hear that all the time.
Right. If I go to my professor or a future investor and say, here's my data, but it only covers a 3-year period and doesn't account for demographic shifts, doesn't that just ruin my pitch? Doesn't it make my argument look weak?
It does the exact opposite, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. Acknowledging limitations is a hallmark of rigorous critical thinking. When you point out the boundaries of your own data set, you are signaling to your audience that you understand the context of your evidence.
Oh, you're showing you've done the work.
Precisely. You are proving that you aren't just blindly trusting a single source.
Mm.
You have the intellectual honesty to evaluate where the data might actually fall short. That level of transparency doesn't weaken your argument at all. It builds an immense amount of academic and professional credibility.
Because it shows you are fully in command of the information.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know the mechanism of translation, we know the importance of cross-referencing, and we know the value of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we actually execute this workflow? What are the specific practical digital tools that you, the listener, can adopt right now to build this concrete foundation? Let's break down the toolkit.
Let's do it.
First, Google Scholar. And to be clear, this isn't just regular Google with a different logo.
No, not at all.
It is a specific filtering engine. It deliberately bypasses the commercial web and indexes peer-reviewed academic literature, citations, and university repositories.
Right, which guarantees that the baseline of your research has already been vetted by other experts in the field.
Exactly. Then you have Google Sheets or similar spreadsheet software. This is not just a digital grid for making lists.
Definitely not.
It is a sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
You can use functions like pivot tables to sort through massive amounts of noise, test variables against each other, and actually find those hidden trends we talked about.
Yeah, it's where the translation starts.
Right. And third, there is Zotero. This is a total game changer for managing references.
I love Zotero. The utility of a tool like that is that it removes the manual friction of research.
Right. No more formatting bibliographies by hand at 3 a.m.
Exactly. Instead of losing hours trying to remember which of your 40 open tabs contain that crucial statistic, a citation manager automates the metadata. It captures the source, the date, the authors, and the context with a single click.
It's amazing.
By offloading all that administrative burden, it frees up your cognitive bandwidth to focus entirely on the actual analysis of the data.
But having the tools is one thing, right? Tools are useless without the right habits. I can own a hammer, but it doesn't mean I know how to frame a house.
Right.
What is a daily habit the listener can build right now to actually put these tools to work?
Well, there is a fantastic 4-step diagnostic habit you can apply to any source material you encounter.
Okay, walk us through it.
Take just one academic article or data set you are working with today. Open it up and deliberately identify 4 specific components. Number 1, isolate the key findings.
So what is the author actually claiming?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Number 2, isolate the exact evidence used to support those findings. Do they have raw data or are they just referencing other opinions?
Crucial difference.
Huge difference. Number 3, evaluate the strengths of their analysis. Ask yourself, why is this data robust?
Okay.
And number 4, identify the possible limitations. What variables did they maybe fail to account for? If you can habitually dissect a source into those 4 components, you are actively practicing high-level data literacy.
Isolate the findings. Isolate the evidence, evaluate the strengths, identify the limitations. That is a brilliant mental checklist.
It really works.
I want to add one more layer to that for the listener. Just something you can ask yourself every single time you sit down to study or prepare a brief. Ask yourself, why is this specific data important to my research?
Mm-hmm.
How does this evidence practically strengthen my argument? And why should I compare this source with another before I finalize my conclusion? If you filter your work through those questions, you will completely eliminate the risk of handing in an unsupported argument.
I completely agree. Those filtering questions prevent you from using data as just like window dressing.
Right.
A lot of weak research uses data simply to make a paragraph look more intimidating.
Yeah.
If you cannot articulate exactly how a statistic strengthens the structural core of your argument, then it doesn't belong in your work.
As we wrap up this deep dive, let's reflect on how mastering these concepts transforms your overall digital confidence and adaptability.
Yeah.
We've moved from the anxiety of staring at a blank page and hoping your opinions are enough to possessing a tangible toolkit and a critical mindset for proving reality. I want to leave you with a core reflection prompt to mull over as you move forward into your next assignment.
Oh, okay.
How can stronger data literacy improve the quality of my academic work and research? Just visualize what your next project will look like when you aren't just summarizing, but actually commanding the evidence.
To synthesize the core mechanics we've explored today, recognize that data is your most powerful tool for strengthening any argument, provided it is used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
High-quality research relies entirely on reliable, cross-referenced evidence. Your credibility hinges on your ability to clearly interpret and translate that data for your audience. And ultimately, moving forward, all of your academic and professional analysis must be evidence-based.
Absolutely. We want to encourage you to stay curious, remain incredibly responsible with how you shape your data, and stay future-ready. Please make sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock these technical skills and habits into your daily workflow.
And for those looking to deepen their understanding of these mechanics, there are three highly recommended resources referenced in our materials today that you should definitely explore.
Oh.
The first is The Craft of Research. The second is Factfulness. And the third is The Art of Statistics. Each of these provides invaluable frameworks for gathering, interpreting, and presenting data with real integrity.
Thank you so much for taking the time to learn with us today.
Thank you.
Before we go, I want to leave you with one final thought. Right now, humanity produces over 300 million terabytes of data every single day. We generate more information in a single afternoon than our ancestors did over millennia.
It's wild to think about.
It is. The world is completely saturated with numbers. As you step into your future career, ask yourself, are you just going to passively consume that data, or are you going to be the one who learns how to command it? See you next time.